May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
This is Attention Please, bringing you into contact with the people, places, events, and issues of the North Olympic Peninsula most deserving of your attention today. I'm Steve Evans. Down behind Sunrise Coffee in the Port Townsend Boat Haven, there's an unobtrusive building with a modest sign announcing its identity as a moderate-risk waste handling facility. Every Friday for the past 9 years, hazardous waste specialist Jerry Mingo has greeted, guided, and educated clients who come to dispose of those items they suspected or knew to be forbidden in the normal waste stream, toxic, incendiary, or corrosive substances. I stopped by to talk to Mingo about his job one recent Friday to find him filling out a form regarding his most recent client.
Right now I'm just recording that we have another residential visitor in this 2:30 hour slot. Today so far we've had 10, 20, 30, in the neighborhood of 40, including one small quantity generator business today. So this is a larger day for us.
A small quantity generator business, so that's as opposed to a residential
That is right, and also as opposed to a fully regulated business that generates more than a certain threshold, that's a 220 pounds per month or batch of hazardous waste. So the businesses that generate less than that threshold and who properly manage their waste are exempted from the more onerous, fully regulated obligations of having a permanent ID number and filing annual reports, and it makes it easy for the smaller businesses. And this program serves both households and small quantity generators. And then, of course, households are just categorically unregulated, so, yeah.
I've always been interested by the fact that household hazardous waste collection facilities do what they do free of charge, because I don't believe that it's actually free to dispose of these things.
Your instinct is correct. So I don't use the term free of charge, or try not to, because in fact, we all pay for this when we pay our garbage bill. A fraction of that goes to support this, or if we're driving to one of the solid waste disposal facilities, a portion of that per ton fee, I think it's $5 per ton, that goes to support this. So what in fact is happening is people are making use of a resource that they're paying for. The stuff's relatively expensive to get rid of, as you can imagine, because it's incendiary, it's flammable, it's a combustible liquid, it's reactive, it's corrosive, it's toxic, it's all these things. So of course it costs more money to get rid of than, say, garbage. But I think the drums that I accumulate here on average are roughly $250 a drum to get rid of, not including my time or the facility utilities, etc.
I did some journalism about toxic waste years ago, and one of the things that one of the sources I talked to said has always stuck with me. He said, you know, we talk about throwing things away, but there is no away. It goes somewhere. So where is that somewhere? Where do these tanks go?
I'm glad you asked that. One part of this program that gives me immense satisfaction and joy, and I try to let people know this whenever the subject comes in, is that 89 to 91%, somewhere in there fluctuating by year, of the materials that we take in go to some beneficial use. The low common denominator there is energy recovery, but that's still better than, you know, raw solvents, for example, going into a long-term landfill in South Central Washington. So some good is coming from it, such a vast majority. We had our 25th year anniversary. I think I recycled all those. Oh good, I still have one. This was 2 years ago, and we had celebrated 25 years. We have served 30,000 customers and prevented 2.5 million pounds of pollution from reaching local land, waterways, and landfills. So that, if you think about that in terms of all the waste that's coming in here, we're a 150,000 pound per year program. You think about that 150,000 pounds not being correctly managed, going in the landfill at best, and then at worst, you know, off our county roads and quiet places and into the environment. And then only, so the other side of that coin is that only 9 to 11% by weight of what we take in actually undergoes hazardous waste disposal. And the most common form of hazardous waste disposal is high temperature destructive incineration in a specialized kiln in Utah. So 3 million pounds have been responsibly managed by today's standards, as opposed to 3 million pounds going into the waste stream at best and our environment at worst.
Sorry, that's over the last 25 years.
Yeah, on some more current, because my employment here with Jefferson County is concluding, I use the occasion to just tally up. I'm at, in my 9 years here, I've managed 1.3 million pounds from 14,000 visitors at this facility. And that doesn't include folks who are using our antifreeze and oil tanks and mercury containing light and rechargeable battery collections at Quill Scene and at the transfer station. That's just customers that have come in here, both household and small quantity generator.
I happen to live in a house that, you know, like has like a shop and, you know, like a big garage that is all like illuminated with old style fluorescent tubes, which I understand actually had a lot more, or have a lot more mercury in them than more contemporary fluorescents. And therefore, out in that shop, up in the loft, I have a collection of burned out tubes that have just been sitting there, and I know I need to bring them in here. Tell me about those tubes. I mean, like, you know, how dangerous are they? I've heard they're pretty dangerous.
It was about 10 years ago, perhaps a little longer, that the status of lamps came out that breaking one lamp exceeded federal permissible exposure limits for workers. So, and I think I heard that right as there was a change, I believe, to less mercury in each lamp. So there is a significant amount of mercury in them. Tanning lamps are a great thing to consider because they don't have the phosphor white powder coating, and you can actually see inside the bead of mercury that's a little smaller than a pea. So you can actually see this almost pea-sized bead of mercury rolling back and forth. So another facet about mercury-containing lights is that it's a priority for Washington State to recover those. And so they have set up the Light Recycle Washington program, whereby when you and I as a consumer go and replace that light, we pay an advanced disposal fee that pays for the rather expensive disposal of them. So all of the fluorescent lamps, as I gesture to my little collection here, yes, and the other places that we take them, we only pay for my time to pack them. That model is known as a producer responsibility. And other examples of manufacturers of these items taking some responsibility for the end of life management of them and that are exercised here in Jefferson County are the rechargeable batteries, architectural paints, which the Peninsula Paint Center down the street participates in. That's paid for by industry. Pharmaceutical collections that are now starting to see kiosks in pharmacies, and there's a mailback program for pharmaceuticals. So these are examples of producer responsibility.
So do you not take pharmaceuticals in here?
We do not here. Yeah, I know a contemporary coworker of mine used to. This is an example of common sense running against bureaucracy. So he recognized that these things are toxic. Because in toxicology, we have a saying, dose makes it toxicity. So anything is toxic at a certain
dose. Right, water is toxic.
At a certain dose, it is, yeah. So this contemporary of mine had realized that and started disposing of pharmaceuticals in with his pesticides, which is totally appropriate because it goes to high temperature destructive incineration. The permitting side to side, we're not allowed to take those by permit, no problem there. The pharmaceutical industry is now required to and has set up a collection program for pharmaceuticals.
These industries, like the paint and the mercury lamp producers, are they recapturing and reusing those materials? I mean, do you know what the fate is once they go back to those places?
Before I answer that, I just want to get one other facet of that lamp, of our lamp program and the state lamp program that we participate in out, which is the industry and the legislature came up with this line in the sand of 10 lamps per person per day. So that's what can be brought in. So just to be clear, a business couldn't do like a change out and bring their 50 or 100 or 200 lamps from their big shop in. We have a small quantity business generator program and a price fee for that. Now, to answer your question about NPHETE, that has been very challenging because there's more mercury out there than there is demand for in commerce, thankfully. And I know at least with elemental mercury, I understand that the Federal Center for Disease Control maintains a indefinite warehouse for the indefinite storage of mercury. Now, another challenge with the NPHETE is it is reported to us users of the program that they recover the aluminum M caps for recycling and the glass. But
the mercury is a...
You know, mercury is a fascinating thing. It wants to be a gas. You know, we know it is a liquid, but it prefers to be a gas. And so here we were thinking about a gas or vapor, but it's not like a gas or vapor that we're familiar with, like water or solvents, gasoline. You know, these solvents come up and they waft away and, you know, things air out. Mercury is not like that. Mercury absorbs into things. So for a while, we household hazardous waste facilities used to have lamp crushers with vacuum equipment and sinks, activated carbon sinks for the capture and collection of these. And a bunch of us programs had them. I had one in my previous employment with Island County. So the way it worked is that it was a drum top piece of equipment that would run a vacuum and then a feeder tube, and that would just suck the tubes straight down into a spinning chain and break. So you could fit thousands and thousands of lamps into a single 55-gallon drum. And somehow in my decision to advocate and then employ that piece of equipment in Island County, I had overlooked an EPA study in which they were unable to account for 40% of the mercury. So they knew how much mercury was going in, and they measured the mercury that got absorbed into the polyethylene tent control rooms that they were using. So there we are, that weird characteristic of mercury vapor, right? Like getting absorbed into the plastic. So they could measure that and measure how much was in the filters, and they couldn't account for 40% of it.
Wow.
It's like, man, I pulled the pin on that drum top thing right away. I just immediately ceased using that thing.
Have you had yourself measured for mercury?
I get measured for mercury yearly. I get measured for all heavy metals, and I just had my blood work come back, and I was anxious on that. I'm at a level 4 of an acceptable level of 0 to 14, and I eat a certain amount of tuna fish. So I just was totally unalarmed at my levels of mercury that way. And also, I'm not a spring chicken, so I'm not, you know. So anyway, we handle lamps intact. We handle whole lamps to minimize the mercury release.
And you must treat them very carefully.
Once we stopped crushing them across in Island County, in those days, the common practice was to put them in these half-inch plywood piano crate style crates, and that would be think about 500 each of 8-foot lamps. And then a fun thing about fluorescent lamps is they're a vacuum tube, and when you put 500 of them together, it represents an accumulative vacuum. So the tech that I worked with over there was nailing the top onto this piano crate style crate for 8-foot lamps. And for some reason, the sides bowed out the tiniest bit, like less than a quarter of an inch. So he had the top sitting on the case without it being nailed. He was just putting his first nail in. He gently leaned into it to straighten it up, and he started a chain reaction that within a split second imploded all of those approximately 500 lamps. Yeah, so there's been one occasion where I had a 4-foot box like you're looking at now get away from me, fell over past my fingertips, went down, and it also imploded. So when this
we're looking at a 4-foot box that contains, I mean, how many would you say, how many tubes are in there?
There's roughly 50.
50 or so, yeah, okay.
50 plus. But this crate imploded and failed by the vacuum, irrespective of any seams on it. It pulled the sides of the box inward off of nails that were on 3-inch centers, and I said that correctly. That was 3-inch centers were how this sidewall was nailed on an 8-foot run on both sides and two ends, and it just sucked those sides off those nails and creased the half inch. I say plywood. It was actually particle board or OSB board,
right.
And it creased in a way that you would expect from a vacuum, again, irrespective of any seams or anything that were in it. So mercury lamps, there was a learning curve to it, and I handle a lot of them here, and I'm thankful that my blood mercury level is at a level of 4 on an acceptable level of 0
have
to 14.
Have you been like a participant in any accident like that might have made you suspect otherwise?
No.
I mean, that sounds like something that must have been kind of difficult to clean up.
Yeah, so our cleanup on that was to, as Monty Python would appreciate, run away. So we run away is what we do. And my neighbors here at the boatyard have been instructed, if they see me running away, they're to follow me. But anyway,
Have you run away from here ever?
No, I've had a few... brown pant moments, if you're familiar with the joke, with the Captain Red Shirt joke. But no, I haven't had any problems that way. But.
Over the course of the hour or so I spent at the facility, I observed Mingo doing his work and realized that a major portion of what he did was education.
So what have you brought in today?
There's some peanut oil.
Peanut oil. Oh yeah. So is peanut oil hazardous?
That is hazardous.
This has been used,
you really use it.
And this is going to be the replacement of it, and so it is expired and potentially rancid. And so we weren't sure whether or not it should be disposed in the regular, at the landfill. So we thought we'd come here and ask these gentlemen what they thought was the best place for it.
We'll find out.
So you found our facility, where we're at, how to use it, all that information, okay?
Yes, actually went online and found all that fun stuff. I didn't realize. I wasn't sure because it had stuff in the tube or not.
Empty containers, as a rule, can go in the trash. You know, I'm hearing some splatter around in there.
Good.
I'm going to take that. You know, this used, or in this case, unused oil is a fascinating thing to me. Did you know that out of a 42-gallon barrel of crude oil, industry gets 1 quart to feed the entire lubricants industry, empty container.
Okay.
And so and it's highly recyclable over and over and over again. And as the price of oil goes up, one consolation may be that they're recovering more base lube, as that's known, from waste oils. And when the price of petroleum is down, then they have to compete. A lot of it just goes to bunker fuel and alternative fuel sources. But I think, so we were talking earlier about 89% to 91% of the stuff that comes in going to beneficial use. And I said the lowest denominator was energy recovery, but a lot of the stuff just gets straight up recycled. Hugely, highly recyclable, like an aluminum can. Another example besides base lube from used oils is, and those are petroleum oils incidentally, is ethylene glycol antifreeze, same thing. They can recycle that over and over and over again. And then, of course, the metals.
So you just took the peanut oil, I'd like to point out to our listeners.
That doesn't obviously have a container, so.
Yeah.
And is this also peanut oil?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Yeah. It's tricky flavored.
and is this just from your private?
Yes.
This is from your own kitchen. It's not a commercial. Okay.
No.
If you were a commercial entity, I'd be obliged to guide you towards one of the rendering companies. another interesting thing. You all may remember the biofuel craze.
Oh, yeah.
Well, long before biofuel, there was a diesel variety called B20. And B20 was known for its good lubricity in engines. And the B stood for bio, so that was a plant-based content to add lubricity to the oil. So when I heard that, they don't really want me to put this in with used automotive fluids, but after I heard that, I kind of fudge a little bit sometimes because I don't know what else to do with it. So I'll be right back.
So this is mostly engine oil?
Yes,
this drum
is used engine oil and gear oil and transmission fluid and all those petroleum oils. They are all a category known as used oil.
Well, that answers another question I had, because I had a friend who changed his oil at my house and I just discovered left me 2.5 gallons of engine oil or so. And I was like, do I take this to the hazardous waste place or... So I guess I do.
Thank you both very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
What about paints and varnishes? Do you use any of that, or that just
so when it's usable? So don't solidify it. That would be true for some latex paints, but there's recycling options for latex paints now. Peninsula Paint Center, for example, is part of a state program. But the oil-based paints can come in here. And don't pre-treat them with absorbent.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank
so
you.
Much.
Have a good weekend.
We're just cleaning up an old garage.
So back on your question about bringing your 2.5 gallons of motor oil in here, you also have the option to use our environmental center at the transfer station here in town. And folks in Quilcene have an environmental center there at the Quilcene disposal site as well. And that... So they don't have to wait for this facility on a Friday. And the environmental centers then... Hi, can I have you pull up about 10 feet? That's good, thank you. The environmental centers accept used petroleum oils, antifreeze, rechargeable batteries, and mercury-containing lights. So I'm going to check in on this customer.
Okay.
Hi. Thanks for coming in. You have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
And why does that have to come here?
It has a rechargeable battery in it, and batteries are typically...
We're looking at a men's electric razor.
Yeah, and rechargeable appliances like this are typically nickel-cadmium batteries or nickel-metal hydride. Both of those metals, nickel and cadmium, are toxic. So, and you'll recognize this. I'm going to... Sorry for the sound spike here.
So he just broke it open.
Yeah, it was an electric shaver that we broke open, and you can see, and some of these internal batteries like this don't, oh, there we are, right in front of my.
Yeah,
nickel cadmium.
Right.
So normally I would just put this whole appliance in the drum. We send out drums of these things. The battery separation that I do is nickel chemistries, lithium chemistries that all get individually bagged. That would be lithium ion or lithium primary batteries, and then small sealed lead acid batteries. So those are the three recyclable batteries being managed through, in this case, a national, the organization is called Call to Recycle, and they're also known as the Rechargeable Battery Recycling Corporation. And that's an association of manufacturers who got together and said, hey, rather than trying to address 50 different states and 50 different sets of rules, let's get ahead of this and let's have a national program. So we have the Call to Recycle boxes. These don't cost us anything other than my time to sort and prep the batteries.
And prepping seems to involve putting them in plastic bags.
Yeah, depending on the voltage, this NiCad's below 7 volts, so it's just going to go into a drum unprotected with its terminals unprotected. All lithium batteries have their terminals protected so that they can be legally and safely shipped, because, you know, we're all aware, I think, of lithium battery fires.
Yeah.
But what's not as well known to folks is that when these little lithium batteries get going, they burn at about 3,000 degrees. Your campfire burns at around 800, for reference. We got some more customers coming in.
How goes, Jay?
Good, how you doing?
I'm doing better than I deserve. Okay, I'm gonna grab a cart and I'll unload that if you don't mind.
So here's something that gets special handling. This is a benzoyl peroxide catalyst for resin. So I don't wanna just throw that in the bin here and have it come in contact with the oil-based material and start a fire at the facilities. So part of this job is knowing what reacts. We just talked about hot lithium fires. Here I've got some organic peroxide catalysts that I take special care of.
So I'm interested that you weren't concerned to know what's in that unmarked can there. I mean, you must get quite a bit of mystery substance.
I know by the container type a lot. It's what we call a screw top. It's in this container because it's a combustible or flammable liquid. And also he handed it to me with a similar one that's kerosene, so I know it's not from the garden shed, for example. So
I see.
So there's a certain amount of process knowledge we use to...
Hi. Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Didn't know what you guys take here.
Okay, I'll unload that if you don't mind, and I'll be right back with a bin to do so.
What are you bringing in today?
I'm bringing in distilled white vinegar.
Distilled white vinegar is an organic acid, as the case goes.
I know, actually, and I could use that. Can the public take things away?
I do put distilled vinegar on my exchange shelves. I'll unload this if you don't mind.
Oh, okay, sure.
So that was some unwanted brush killer, a full container. I see lots of those. Empty containers, as a rule, can go in the trash. Yeah. Some 3% hydrogen peroxide, which isn't hazardous, but I take it anyway because I'm thankful people are bringing this stuff in. Some mink oil shoe polish and brown boot dressing. These are typically petroleum based, and I've got a great big cubic meter box that those kinds of things go in. Now this is Doc Martin's shoe treatment, and what I look for on this, and this is useful to your listeners hopefully, I'm not seeing any warning or danger on here. Nothing that's giving any kind of indication. I almost said caution, warning, danger, but so many things that say caution are not really hazardous waste, but I don't hold it against folks if they bring in things that are marked caution. But in this case, this Doc Martens Wonder Shoe Balm is not a hazardous material, and I'll leave it with the customer. I could throw it out for them, but I don't, for two reasons. One is my dumpster fills up, and the other is I want people to go away remembering that there's certain things they can throw out without those label signal words.
It was late in the day that Mingo related to me that this was, in fact, his last day on the job. After more than 30 years of seeing to the proper handling of solid waste, moderate risk coordinator Jerry Mingo has retired. This is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News.